From the macabre minds of Laughing Devil Production comes another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind, amp up your imagination, and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
The Vanished Secretary. The town of Denver, Colorado, had not been built very long when I visited on my U.S. tour. In fact, little more than 10 years previously, it had possessed only one orthodox street, so it seemed the last place in the world where I would expect to come across a haunted house. Yet I heard of 3 hauntings at least while I was in Denver, one of these being so strange that I must include it here. I call it the case of the vanished secretary, and I came to hear of it this way. I had been to the Zoological Gardens and was returning by tram when a journalist called Ruyak, who I had met a few times, came running up to me in great excitement. "O'Donnell," he said, "I have unearthed something that will interest you. The case of a haunted office." He then, on the spot, began to tell me the story. "The office," said Ruyak, "was rented by Mrs. Bell, a typist who employed 2 girls, Stella Dean and Hester Holt. One day Hester Holt failed to put in an appearance. 'If Hester is ill,' Mrs. Bell told Stella Dean, 'she ought to have let me know. There was nothing wrong with her yesterday, was there?' 'Not that I am aware of,' Stella replied. 'When she parted from me just across the way, she went off in the best of spirits. I expect she'll turn up all right tomorrow.' But next morning Hester Holt did not turn up, and Stella Dean was dispatched in the lunch hour to find out what had become of her. Stella returned looking very white-faced and scared. 'Hester's gone away without telling anyone where she was going,' she told her employer. 'You don't say,' said Mrs. Bell. 'What can have happened? She never went to her lodgings after leaving here. At least, that's what the landlady says,' Stella replied. 'She hasn't written either, but I think you'd better call her yourself. I don't like the woman.' And then she burst into tears. This was the beginning of the mystery. Mrs. Bell called on the landlady, Mrs. Britton, who repeated firmly that she had neither seen Hester Holt nor heard anything of her since she left the house the previous day, presumably to go to the office. There had been no words between them, she said, and Hester had seemed, as usual, perfectly happy. She was a very reserved girl and never mentioned her family except when she went away for her annual holiday. On these occasions, she asked that all her letters should be forwarded to the address of her married sister. Mrs. Britton gave this address to Mrs. Bell, who wrote off to it at once. She received an answer by return of post to say that Hester was not there and no news of her had been received for over a month. The married sister, however, made an important statement. She said that one person sure to know of Hester's whereabouts was Pete Simpkins, the young man she was hoping eventually to marry. Mrs. Bell, now most curious, hurried off and spoke to Simpkins. In her own words, he seemed a bright, intelligent young man and showed great astonishment and concern on learning of the disappearance of his sweetheart. 'When did you last see her?' Mrs. Bell asked. 'The day she left you,' said Simpkins. 'I had been out in the country all day, superintending the building of a large farm some 10 miles to the east, and I was cycling home along a little road when I met a buggy. 2 girls were in it, and I was surprised to see they were Hester and Stella.' 'What?' Mrs. Bell said. 'Stella Dean? Are you sure?' Simpkins replied that he was positive and would swear to it. It surprised him greatly, as he knew the girls had been on very bad terms. He was engaged to Stella before he met Hester, but could not stand her temper. One day, he said, Stella was so angry with my dog because it snarled at her that she seized my walking stick and beat it on the head. I found her standing over the dog, white with fury, and it dead. I felt after this I could never like her again, so I broke off our engagement. After that, I met Hester at the same house where I had first seen Stella, and we became friends. Stella did not like it. She took on more than was necessary, and Hester told me there had been some painful scenes between them. I thought after this, out of business hours, they were not on speaking terms, which is why I was so surprised to see them driving in the buggy side by side. It's all very mysterious, Mrs. Bell said. If Hester doesn't turn up soon, I shall have to inform the police. The following day, Mrs. Bell asked Stella if she had gone for a drive with Hester, the evening of Hester's disappearance. Stella made an instant denial. No, she replied. The last time I saw Hester was when she left here that afternoon. She said goodbye to me, as usual, on the other side of the road, and I have not set eyes on her since. Stella admitted that she had once been engaged to Pete Simpkins, but strongly denied that Hester's keeping company with him had led to any disagreement between them. Hester and I were always on the very best of terms, she said, and it would be downright mean of anyone to say otherwise. Besides, I can produce proof to the contrary. The next day, as Hester was still missing, Mrs. Bell told the police. They made immediate inquiries, and Pete Simpkins' story about the buggy was corroborated. Someone else had seen the two girls driving towards the outskirts of town that same evening, while a car proprietor also came forward and said he remembered Hester hiring a buggy from him, but that she had driven off in it alone. When the buggy was brought back, his wife had taken the money for it, but she could not swear to the identity of the girl who had paid it, as it was then dusk and the girl was so muffled up against the cold that practically nothing of her face was visible. The wife could only say that Stella Dean resembled the girl both in build and height. Stella was now asked if she could produce an alibi, and accordingly her aged mother declared that Stella had come straight home from the office and remained indoors all that evening. To add to the complexity of the affair, another person testified to having seen Hester Holt enter Mrs. Britton's, the landlady's house, with a latchkey late on the night in question, and this made some people suspect Mrs. Britton, but the police could prove nothing and the matter was eventually dropped. All this had happened about 3 months before I arrived in Denver. A week after Hester's disappearance, Mrs. Bell took on a new assistant called Vera Cummings, a very practical young lady, the daughter of a farmer near Omaha. The day after her arrival, Miss Cummings was busy typing in the office with Mrs. Bell and Stella Dean when she suddenly exclaimed, "How is it that I get convulsed with shivers whenever I sit next to you, Miss Dean? I don't when I'm sitting next to Mrs. Bell. Oh, I feel as if an icy east wind were blowing right through me." "What nonsense," Stella replied. "You imagine it." "No, I don't," Miss Cummings retorted. "I'm going to sit somewhere else," and she moved to the other side of the table. Mrs. Bell made no comment. An hour or so afterwards, Vera Cummings abruptly observed, "My, Stella, what long legs you have." "What in the world do you mean?" was a surprised and angry retort. "Why, there's no one else on your side of the table, is there?" Vera Cummings said. "And someone's feet keep giving mine." "You're dreaming," Stella said. When Mrs. Bell noticed, she turned very pale. 2 days now passed uneventfully, but on the third day after this conversation, Mrs. Bell and the two girls were sitting talking. It was close on the interval for tea and work was slack when Vera Cummings said, "Stella, who is that tall, good-looking girl I've seen following you into the building? I've watched her keeping close behind you till you get to the elevator, and then she disappears. Where she goes, I can't imagine." "A tall, good-looking girl following me to the elevator?" Stella Dean repeated, going very white. "What do you mean? I've seen no one. You've dreamt it." "What was she like?" Mrs. Bell interrupted. Vera Cummings gave a minute description of her. "Are you sure, Stella? We don't know anyone like her. Mrs. Bell said quietly. That description seems to tally exactly with someone we once knew, someone who used to frequent this place. Can she have returned, do you think?
I don't know who you mean, Stella said crossly. I tell you, I've seen no one.
The next morning, they all three arrived simultaneously and went up together in the elevator. On nearing the office, the sound of a typewriter was heard. They looked at one another in open-mouthed astonishment.
It must be one of the clerks in the building, Vera Cummings said. She's mistaken our room for hers. She's an early bird anyway, for I reckon there's no one else arrived yet.
But the door is locked, Mrs. Bell whispered. See, here's the key. And she took it from her pocket as she spoke.
Well, there's no mistaking the sound, is there? Vera Cummings laughed. Click, click, click. That's a typewriter, sure enough. Someone must have got in through a window. My, Stella, how white you are.
Mrs. Bell glanced sharply at Stella. There was not an atom of color in the girl's cheeks, and the pupils of her eyes were dilating with fright. Mrs. Bell had put the key in the lock and opened the door. The typewriter was working away furiously, but there was no one at it. The room was absolutely empty. The typing stopped the moment Mrs. Bell crossed the threshold. That afternoon, Stella complained of a headache and went home early. She was in bed for several weeks, and during her absence from the office, the strange phenomena there entirely ceased. The morning she returned, Pete Simpkins met her and Vera Cummings just outside the office building. He was bubbling over with excitement.
She's come back, he cried. Come back. And never sent me a word. I am glad, though. Hooray!
Come back? Stella said, drawing herself up stiffly and regarding him with an angry stare.
Who are you talking about? Hester, of course, Simpkin exclaimed. She's just gone into your place. Didn't you know?
Stella made no reply. She simply pushed past him and walked in. Vera Cummings, however, dawdled behind.
What is Hester like? She asked anxiously.
Simpkins described her.
Why? That's the girl I used to see following Stella, she said. Where she disappears to is a mystery, but it's only one of the funny things that have happened here since I've been here. She then told him about the typewriter and the feet under the table. Pete Simpkins repeated the story to his friends. Ruyak got a hold of it, checked to the police, and handed it on to me. Ruyak was most anxious that I should go with him to the haunted office straight away, but I had some work to finish to a deadline, and so it was arranged he should call for me one day the following week. He turned up on time, but heavily disappointed.
I'm afraid it's no use, he said. The office is closed, and it's impossible to get permission to go there. It comes about like this. The day after Stella returned to work, Mrs. Bell was away ill, and the two girls were alone. Sometime after they had started work, around about 11 o'clock, Vera Cummings got up to drink water and in passing chanced to look at Stella. Stella was leaning forward in her chair and staring horrified at a dispatch case on the floor, which was oscillating violently to and fro. Vera noticed that the dispatch case was marked on one side with the letters HH.
That's odd, she cried. What makes it do that?
It can't be due to vibration, because there's nothing going by outside.
How do you account for it, Stella?
I don't know, Stella gasped, making a vigorous attempt to appear unconcerned. Perhaps they're shunting something heavy downstairs.
But we would hear them, Vera Cummings replied. I believe it's Hester Holt. She's dead, and for some mysterious reason her spirit haunts this room.
Nonsense, Stella shouted. How can you be so silly? There are no such things as ghosts.
After a time, Ruyak continued. The case stopped shaking and the two girls went on with their work.
Lunchtime came and they both rose to get ready to go out. Vera Cummings had put on her hat and was walking to the door when she heard a sharp cry. She turned around and there was Stella Dean standing in front of the mirror, gazing at the reflection of a pale face
with two dark, menacing eyes glaring fixedly at her over her shoulder. Vera says she recognized the face at once as being that of the girl she had seen following Stella, the girl Pete Simpkins had told her was Hester Holt. She was so frightened, for she knew for certain now that the thing she was looking at was nothing earthly, that she ran out of the room, and as she crossed the threshold of the door, slammed it behind her with a terrific crash. Ashamed of her cowardice, she tried the door handle. It turned, but though she pressed her hardest, the door would not open. She called to Stella, but there was no reply. Very alarmed, she ran to the elevator and fetched the man in charge of it. They both pushed the door, but still it would not open. They were deliberating what to do next when they saw the handle suddenly turn and the door gently swing back on its hinges. They peered in. Stella was lying on the hearth rug in a dead faint. She died that same night. "Died?" I said. "Yes," said Ruyak. "Some people fancy she committed suicide, but her mother says Stella's heart had long been affected. Anyhow, she's dead, and the office is closed, as nothing will persuade Vera Cummings to work there till Mrs. Bell is well enough to return. I tried to get permission for us to spend a night there, but Mrs. Bell says she daren't give it. The landlord is furious with her for allowing the rumor to get around that the building is haunted, and he threatens to take action if it doesn't stop." "That's a great pity," I said. "It's a case I'd certainly like to dig into." "What do you make of it?" Ruyak asked, though I could see he had reached his own conclusion and was merely seeking confirmation from me. It was risky to build an explanation on circumstantial evidence, yet the facts were so strong that the deduction we had both arrived at seemed glaringly obvious. "Like you," I admitted, "I feel there can be only one conclusion. Stella was madly jealous of Hester, and during that drive in the buggy she killed her. Whether the murder was premeditated or done in a sudden fit of blind passion, you tell me. Her temper at times was very uncontrollable. Of course, we cannot say. From your sketch of her, however, I am inclined to think she planned the whole thing." "But what could she have done with the body?" Ruyak said. "The police searched everywhere." "Well," I said, "the track Simpkins was on when he passed the buggy affords countless opportunities for concealing a body. It is full of deep ditches, creeks, and crevices, covered with a thick and rank vegetation, and the police would take months, years, to explore it. Besides, I don't think for a moment that Stella Dean was haunted without some poignant reason."
"Was haunted?" Ruyak exclaimed.
"What do you mean?" I said. "You said she was dead, didn't you?"
"Yes," he replied.
"She's dead, right enough. But when Vera Cummings passed by the office this morning, she saw Stella enter it. Stella, just as she looked when alive, only very white and in obvious terror. She passed right in through the half-open doorway, and as usual, Hester Holt followed her. Shortly after this I left Denver, I never did hear from Ruyak whether he finally obtained permission to hold a vigil in the haunted office, or with what remarks the Denver police closed the missing persons file on Hester Holt, if indeed it ever was closed.